This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Today I'm with Dr. Tom Broadhurst from the University of the Basque Country. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us in the Jodcast studio.
My pleasure.
So you've come to Manchester and you've given a talk on so-called light cold dark matter. Could you maybe start off this interview by giving us an overview of what your research interests are and what your kind of field is in terms of astrophysics?
Well, we've been looking for many years at the phenomenon of gravitational lensing. What we've learned is that light is bent by many astronomical objects, galaxies, clusters of galaxies. And this is a relativistic, general relativistic effect predicted by Einstein. And we've measured this. What happens is that light from distant galaxies forms a kind of arc-shaped distortions, much like when you look through the bottom of a wine glass at a distant source of light, like a candle, you'll notice these long, stretched, bright images of the candle. So that can be used to measure the amount of matter that's bending the light. And in all cases when we do this, we see that there's a lot more matter which is present than you would expect. If you add up them, what you see in terms of the starlight from the galaxies, we know how much stars weigh. The Sun, for example, is a typical star. So we can easily see that we're short of matter at the level of about 10 or a factor of 100 compared with what's observed. So then the question is, what is this dark matter? So today I've proposed that we consider more thoroughly a wave-like interpretation for dark matter. We know that dark matter is not hot, it's not relativistic, otherwise it would have moved away from galaxies and smoothed them out. Actually, we wouldn't exist, galaxies would not form. There would be no small-scale structure in the universe, on which, of course, our existence depends. So, this light bosonic interpretation is very much the opposite of what's normally considered.
Okay, so just to give a bit of context to our listeners, could you maybe briefly outline what the current accepted model for dark matter is, in opposition to this new model that you're proposing?
Yeah, well, the accepted model is one that you naturally think of. What you want is a particle of some kind that's heavy, so it doesn't move very quickly, therefore it's not relativistic, and it shouldn't interact except by gravity.
Okay.
Otherwise, you might emit light and you would see them, and we don't. So that's the natural expectation, and there have been searches for this in deep underground chambers that you will have heard of that become more and more sensitive over time. And a lot of resources spent trying to detect these, because it would be wonderful if we did. Also, the LHC in Switzerland, the Large Hadron Collider, potentially could generate this kind of dark matter as well, since it reaches now very high unexplored energies. In principle, then, by colliding particles together, you may notice in these collisions evidence for new particles that would have to be stable, wouldn't have the usual signature in the collider. Basically, you would notice a lack of momentum.
Okay.
So when you add it up, you realize, oh, something has been created there. In fact, pairs, antiparticle-particle pairs should form, right? So since that has yet to show up, and, despite all the improvements, has not, we've become more interested in what's called a condensate form of dark matter.
Okay.
Which very light particles can fall into. The quantum ground state of, in the case where you have what are called bosonic particles, is cold inherently.
Okay. Now, it's a very, very low energy.
Very low energy, and all the particles have the same wave-like behavior. And in fact, all the waves should be in phase in the ground state.
Okay. So there's a real-life sort of analogy for this between what are known as fermions and what are known as bosons. And so there's this so-called Bose-Einstein condensate.
Exactly, yeah. Only bosons would do this.
Sure.
As you know, the condensate, Bose condensate, was discovered in the laboratory in the late 90s, and that's, quantum mechanically, you can now create such condensate. So that Bose-Einstein state of matter I think it's sometimes called the fifth state of matter, has been verified. So quantum mechanically, this is feasible. And what we'd like is to have the dark matter in that state mm-hmm. with a very long wavelength.
Okay.
So all these very light bosons would have a very long wavelength. The lighter the particle, the longer its wavelength. And in that way, we may hope to understand some of the anomalous features of cosmology, okay. galaxies, this internal structures, you know, that wave-like behavior. You can imagine may produce some very distinct predictions that differ from standard heavy particles.
Okay. So it might just be worth expanding a little bit on this, because we're kind of moving from astrophysics into like particle physics, and maybe some of our listeners might not be as familiar. But basically, when you're talking about a wave function, it's this sort of property that people are used to hearing about light having a behaving as a wave and a particle, but it turns out that but it turns out that you can apply that principle to particles as well to some extent. So this is why you can talk about the wavelength of a particle or the wave behavior of a particle. Right. So, but coming back to the bosonic cold dark matter formulation. So, what are some of the problems with particulate cold dark matter that can be solved by this alternative formulation?
Well, you see, the particle interpretation of the observed coldness of dark matter has no inherent scale. There's no pressure. And that means that in that context, you can form galaxies of all masses. In fact, you would form many more small ones than you do large ones. There would be a hierarchy without any limit. But we noticed that, at least around the Milky Way and local galaxies that we can study well, there are relatively few small galaxies.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers of dwarf galaxies is maybe two orders of magnitude lower than predicted. Also, those galaxies don't have the expected concentration of dark matter that you would predict in the case of heavy particles. They should not have any scale length, and so you'd expect them to be concentrated without limit. What we notice for the dwarf galaxies is that there is a finite central density of matter. This, you know, the straightforward analysis of the data, the motions of the stars in these galaxies, tells you that there are what we call cores of dark matter.
Mm-hmm.
The density doesn't rise without limit.
Okay.
In fact, it rises to a maximum.
Okay, so there are some very promising solutions to existing problems that can be sort of brought up by bosonic dark matter. What kind of is the next step? What needs to be done now to sort of really try and confirm the validity of this as a candidate for dark matter?
Right. Well, you know, we want to test it to the limits. Mm-hmm. And We don't really mind either way whether we, you know, nature behaves like this or not,
sure.
right?
Yeah,
it's just
yeah.
a question of testing predictions.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Key distinguishing feature of this is the wave-like behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that produces sort of a pattern of standing waves, like ripples in a pond.
Mm-hmm.
Inside every galaxy, you would have these long wavelength modes. And then we would notice that, for example, a bright point source through a halo of a galaxy, we should see that its magnification is a bit affected by presence of these waves.
Okay.
So that's some work that in Manchester, there's a history of analysing what are called lensed quasars.
Mm-hmm.
And these brightness anomalies have been noticed.
Okay.
That there are bigger variations in brightness than expected. So that's a key test we want to look at. More of these in more detail. If that wave-like behavior shows up in that simple way, we would be very much more confident in this model.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you very much for talking to us, Dr. Tom Broadhurst.
Thank you.